You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This broadcast is brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. We put the fun in fundraising. Attend your local event and visit www.ducks.org/events to find one in your area. Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein is happy to be with you for the next hour. We're going to talk deer quite a bit. Eric Morgan, the web editor here, is going to join us. We'll talk to him in maybe about 15 minutes with the firearms deer forecast. We had that in the print version last week, but we'll talk to Eric directly about that. We're also going to talk with someone from the American Forest Foundation. Pretty good easement program that organization has unveiled across the state. You might be able to get paid for your forest lands. We'll talk to a gal from that group at the bottom of the hour. And then Lesmeister and I will wrap up. But Tim Spielman here to help me kick it off. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. And Tori McCormick had a story on top of this week's paper. Continuing that theme we've been talking about, super dry and what that means for bird hunters especially.
Yeah, it was, I don't know if it's mid-season. Maybe it's getting close to that for ducks, but it was the bird breakdown. Catch up on where things are at, and there wasn't anything really out of the blue. And it's been kind of weird this year. I've talked to people, and they say, "When's the duck season end?" Because it's been so warm, and birds haven't been from the northern locales. And it's a little bit early to worry about the duck season ending before the cold front rolls in and you get the big push of mallards. But it's apparently on people's minds. It's not, oh my God, everything's going to freeze up before the season's over this year. It's so far the theme has been the ducks from afar going to come through before the season's over. So, and judging from Tori's story and from our hunting and fishing report, there's not a lot of quote unquote new birds in most places so far.
And if we're worried about that, imagine what they're thinking down in Arkansas and Missouri and Louisiana, where they had a very poor season last year for that reason. The birds took forever to get down there, and it certainly seems like that's the situation again here in 2024. And one last point on ducks is, so we had the early season where there were some local birds, and it didn't sound bad. But now, to Tori's point, those birds are gone. They've been pushed out, and we're all waiting for migration. So we need that to get going. You know, Tim, I had Tony Peterson on just a few weeks ago, and we talked about how water wasn't really an issue in the landscape this year because of all the rain, all the full ponds that we had because of the rain in May, June, and July. How quickly that has changed. I mean, walking around my dad's place, there's no water there, and there was very little deer sign, very little wildlife sign. All the critters are down in the valley where they can have access to a creek and some water, I think.
Yeah, well, when you say Tony Peterson, I shouldn't automatically think deer hunting because Tony does kind of the gamut of of hunting, but I do think about deer, and as the rut is getting closer, supposedly, that would be a consideration for deer hunters too. I mean, some places you don't really have a choice. They say hunt near water, but if you're not hunting land where there's not water, then what do you do? And I speak from experience in one area where I hunt, but otherwise, if you have that option, it's you might want to kind of focus on those stands that have water sources because it is so dry.
Absolutely, yeah. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreeslein and Tim Spielman are kicking off this week's broadcast. We had our trapping update. This is a kind of boilerplate story we run every year. Natalie Ryder wrote it, but some kind of interesting new wrinkles this year. We've got a couple species, pine martens and fishers, that their population has been growing, and the DNR has decided we can have a statewide season for both of these fur bearers. a short season, but nonetheless, a new recreational opportunity.
Yeah, it sounds like it's, well, I think you wrote about in your column too, but it's sort of an experiment just to see what trappers might harvest in that new area and look at various things about those fishers. So very conservative approach, which is probably the way it should be with any new opportunity like this, trapping or otherwise. It'll be kind of cool to see what if people do trap them. Maybe there's a lot more than we even know, but I think that's what we're trying to find out.
We've got some guys that catch an incidental fisher in parts of the state where they turn it into the DNR, and I don't know what happens to it then. Now, you know, those guys can keep that one fisher. John Erb also told me, I didn't mention this in my story, but it was on the record, so I'm comfortable sharing it here. But he said they get a fair number of fishers from just north of the line, which would imply, you know, maybe some guys are picking up just south of the line and then reporting it as north of the line. And collecting data for a year on where these animals are actually coming from will help, you know, clarify that a little bit. Yep. Again, John Erb making it very clear that if we feel like we're over harvesting and we're slowing down this recolonization process, we'll dial it back. We can do that quickly with these seasons. So I'm trying to, you know, look at the glass half full and say this is an opportunity. My dad was a little like, gosh, we just got him back and now we're going to start trapping him. He's gotten a few on his trail cameras.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's so limited, though. I mean, there might be a few taken, but it's the whole population effect thing. I just can't see how one fisher for the number of people that the trap is going to have an effect. I think it's more valuable just by learning, you know, where they're at and how many there are and having a better idea about those things.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think this is a good thing. We're seeing them pop up on trail cameras and mostly along the river corridor counties, it sounds like, down, you know, the Mississippi River area where, you know, my dad's down there, the Minnesota River corridor. He said they've got a lot of them all the way out to Lac La Parle, Big Stone. He said the metro area, presumably most of the, you know, the fringes of the metro and the Whitewater have a lot of them. They're seeing a surprising number in those areas, and that they have a smaller home range in the south than in the north. One fisher needs a lot of acreage, a lot of square miles in the north to make a living, whereas in the south, where it's more fertile, there's a lot more prey diversification. Fishers are doing pretty good. They don't need much space.
Yeah, they don't colonize around heavy feral cat populations, do they?
Yeah, I kind of mentioned that in my column. Okay, and I asked John that too. I didn't go into great detail to him, but he said there's some controversy with fishers like in the Northeast where they're also recolonizing, where they are murder on cats, and he said not just feral cats. So, yeah, these are tough animals that they take out porcupines. I don't think they have any problem killing a cat. So if you live in fisher country, another reason to keep your cat indoors.
Yep, there you go.
Before we go, Tim, we got a few minutes. We should talk about Lake Mille Lacs. This meeting went down just after our broadcast last week. The advisory committee up there met with the DNR, and some good news perhaps coming out of the Lake Mille Lacs region. I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's terribly unexpected that there was going to be an allowable walleye take during the ice season, but the fact that it might be two walleyes might get some ice fishers excited until they find out that there are so many young perch and tulipies in the forage base now that the bite's not going to be very good. But whatever, Mille Lacs is a nice fishing experience the times I've been there. And there might even be perch big enough to keep. So even if the walleyes aren't biting, that's the DNR message, I guess, is that you might find some perch. But the allowable take from this past season, to no one's surprise, we had a story a month or so ago. It was toward the end of the catch and release season, which began with the opener. Total catch and release for walleyes until August 16th, I believe it was. And up to that point, I think roughly a quarter of what state anglers could take pound-wise of walleyes had been taken. So there were a lot of pounds of walleyes left sitting on the table, which would explain why, especially, you know, at the ultra-conservative approach, the fact that the bite was tailing off later in the spring and summer because those classes of perch and tulipies were getting to the size and walleyes were getting to the size where they were becoming a forage for those for walleyes. So a lot of walleyes left over, and that might be reflected in a two walleye limit come December 1st, I think.
Yeah.
The ice fishing season, basically.
That's when that kicks in. And we should be clear, this isn't official as we're speaking. Who knows? Maybe in coming days we might get a press release locking it in. I guess the message would be to anglers, use some perch-colored lures while you're up there this winter, huh?
Yeah. Yep. And pray for good ice for a change.
That would be nice. Get some good ice and let's all go have a good time on Mille Lacs this winter. That's looks it looks like an opportunity, and we're going to be
Yep.
positive about it. So maybe a crack at two walleyes for per day up there. All right, Tim, I'm out of time. Thanks. Appreciate you spending a segment with me.
You bet.
Tim Spielman, editor at the Minnesota Outdoor News. Let's grab a break. We'll probably talk some deer when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
The North Metro Ice Show is back at Adrenaline Sports Center in Ramsey, October 26th and 27th, presented by Thorn Brothers and Ice Castle Fish Houses. Kids under 5 are free, and so is parking. One ticket covers both days. Each entry pass includes 5 free raffle tickets with $5,000 in prizes. Over 60 top ice fishing brands, plus wheeled and skid houses on display. Don't miss the first ice fishing show of the season, October 26th and 27th at Adrenaline Sports Center in Ramsey. For more information, go to northmetroiceshow.com.
Cold temperatures are on the way. If you're a hunter, you want to stay out longer, no matter what the thermometer says. Arctic Shield, L&M Fleet Supply, and Outdoor News are teaming up to give away the best cold weather hunting gear in the industry. Between now and the end of October, you can win a full set of Arctic Shield Classic Elite Parka and Bibs. We'll give away 2 full sets per week in October. To enter, just click on the contest tab at OutdoorNews.com.
Sick of eating tag soup? It's time to own your odds this fall with OnX Hunt, the GPS hunting app trusted by millions of hunters. Now you'll have access to nationwide public and private land ownership information, waypoints, optimal wind for each stand, tracks, and much more. All at your fingertips. Go to onxmaps.com/hunt and use code ODN20 at checkout to receive 20% off your membership. That's code ODN20.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to OutdoorNews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Hi, this is DNR Conservation Officer Adam Block. Hunter education programs developed by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources have helped make hunting a safe activity. In fact, hunting is one of the safest outdoor recreational activities in terms of injuries per 100,000 participants. And hunter education training is available to everyone. For more information, call 800-366-8917.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. Rob Treisline back with you for another segment. Thanks for tuning in. We've got the regular firearms opener coming up pretty soon, November 9th, Saturday, November 9th. The Outdoor News, we had a very thorough firearms deer forecast written by Eric Morkin in a recent edition of our newspaper. And Eric joins me now to flesh out that forecast a little bit for listeners. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it's an exciting time of year for deer hunters. I know all about that.
Eric is the web editor at Outdoor News and a very serious deer hunter. Eric, you've been bow hunting a lot. You've bow hunted Minnesota and both Dakotas or just one of them?
Yep, both Dakotas. Early in the season, I like to hit those openers right around the archery openers and stuff. So I was out there early, and then I've been for the last few weeks, I've been targeting Minnesota mostly kind of right around our where I live in that west central area of the state. So,
and how many deer have you put in the freezer so far?
Talking to me at the right now or at the right time, because I just put my first one in the freezer last night. So I got my first deer with a bow last night, a nice doe here about 15 minutes from my place. So we're getting low when it comes to venison in the freezer now and stuff. So it's good to get a doe in there and kind of get that base built back up.
So there you go. So you got to get some meat in the freezer. Now you can hunt for some antlers, huh?
kind of focusing on bucks a little bit here as we get into this early November and late October time period. So
what are you seeing out there afield? One thing you were telling me off air, something I've alluded to a little bit on this broadcast, is a general lack of acorns, at least compared to last year. Last year was one of the greatest acorn years ever. Quite the opposite in 2024, huh?
It is. In areas that I have hunted, it has been a grind just to find an oak that's producing, period. I on a lot of public around this central Minnesota area of the state and in the areas that I'm hunting, it's really affected how I'm trying to find deer. I rely on that acorn crop quite a bit as kind of like a primary food source each year, and it has been really tough to find acorns at all this year in my neck of the woods. And I asked around when I would talk to managers around the state for this preview and stuff too, and you know, the best report I got from one area was that I can't even remember exactly what area that was. I think that was in that kind of an area in the Southwest a little bit that it was spotty. But other than that, I think I'm hearing too that it's just not a great acorn year right now and everything. So
one of the theories I've heard about that is that it was so wet this past spring and early summer when the oaks are pollinating they are wind-borne pollinators. And when everything is so wet, that may have prevented some of that pollination from going on and resulted in fewer oaks pollinating each other and less of a fruit crop, i.e. acorns.
I've got a buddy who has his own tree care business, and he went to school for forestry. And we were just talking about this a little bit recently and just how that stress is going to create like a boom acorn year on oaks and stuff, and trees in general. When they're stressed, they're gonna you know, produce those fruits and stuff at a high level. We talked a little bit about that, how that just was not the case this year in those wet conditions like you mentioned earlier in the year here. I can't remember a year quite like this in terms of being out there scouting, trying to find deer. Usually in the places I'm hunting, it's covered up in oaks, a lot of bur oaks and things like that. And I can't remember a year where I've seen so few acorns on the ground. So
what does that mean for deer hunters? I mean, the deer have to eat something. Does that mean they're relying mm-hmm. more on agricultural food sources or different browses that you're having to hone in on as an archer and later in the season as a firearms deer hunter?
That's the answer I've been trying to figure out here the last, you know, few weeks. It has made it more difficult for me for sure this year. I think now what I'm seeing is, especially as like beans start to come out before these fields are plowed and things like that, they are really hitting crops right now. They're hitting corn, things like that. I've seen that. But, you know, come gun season and everything, a lot of fields around the state are going to be plowed under and everything in ag country. So, you know, maybe they're starting to shift more even, and they always do at that time of year in November. They're going to start shifting towards woody browse, things like that, you know, a little bit more. But yeah, anywhere they can find any green left too, they'll certainly take advantage of that. And I think too, like earlier this year, I think they must have been just relying more on natural vegetation, not necessarily like hard mass crop and everything, because it just wasn't available and everything. But it's hard. You got to scout it out and really have the time to try to find it when you're used to relying on those oaks.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline. We're chatting with Eric Morkin. He's the web editor at Outdoor News, but he's also a very serious deer hunter. He writes a fair amount of deer stories, deer copy for Outdoor News. Check him out at outdoornews.com. He recently wrote the 2024 Firearms Deer Forecast piece that appeared in our print edition. Again, you can read that at outdoornews.com. Let's talk about how many deer are out there this year. What's on the landscape? What's your personal outlook? Do you think there's going to be a lot of young of the year deer on the landscape this fall as we get into that firearms deer season?
I think there will be as you look at the state as a whole. I wrote that story recently for us at Outdoor News about the South Central Minnesota fawn study that they're doing and how this was the fourth year of that collaring study. And that study area was in an area that was hit hard by severe flooding right at that fawn drop period in that, you know, early June timeframe. And it was eye-opening to see how, you know, of the 4 years they've been doing this study, how the fewest fawns that they had collared had made it through their first summer here. So it definitely did have an impact. And in talking around to regional managers and things like that, I mean, they did say, you know, like that there is potential for that. They can't control their thermal temperature well when they're really, really young and they get wet and cold and stuff. And like you said, it in flooding areas, it congregated them into areas where predators could just get at them easier. But what managers were quick to say to me too was that those are probably isolated areas and stuff. If you look across the landscape in areas where habitat was good and you didn't have like extreme flooding, it created lush growing conditions for vegetation at a time when does really needed that nutritional boost to raise fawns when they're producing milk and stuff. So generally speaking, I think there's going to be good numbers of fawns on the landscape across the state. And I think just deer in general should be in pretty good body condition and ready to go here as we look ahead going into the winter and everything. So
certainly this fall has not been stressful for deer temperature wise. We talked about Maybe there's not as much forage out there with the poor acorn crop, but I got to think they haven't had to tap any fat reserves at all yet. They're still putting fat on in a year like this when the temperatures have been 10, 15, 20 degrees above normal so much. So last year, Eric, we killed, about 158,700 deer. I think the DNR was a little surprised it was that low. I think there was some talk of maybe hitting 200,000 last year. That did not happen. I don't hear the DNR throwing out any big numbers this year, 200,000 or anything, even though we're coming off that mild winter. What did Todd Froberg, DNR big game guy, tell you? Do they have a prediction for or an estimate for harvest in 2024?
They're definitely not throwing out those big numbers and stuff this year. The mindset and the kind of what he told me was that, and what I had heard prior to, was that they are anticipating a fairly similar total harvest number this year. And it feels like part of that is by design somewhat when it comes to like license allocations and everything. They didn't up the bag limits in any deer permit area across the state this year. The message that I got from a lot of the regional managers and when listening to the conversations that they had with their wildlife managers at kind of those more local levels was that they do want to, for the most part, in a lot of these areas, any of these areas that the population goal was to build that population up was kind of, let's use this mild winter, this good growing season that we've had here, and use it as an opportunity to build on the herd. And as one regional manager told me, you know, they're erring on the side of caution because having a few surplus deer on the landscape, that's good for that herd going forward in case they do have another bad winter or something like that. It just gives you a little flexibility there.
So the number of like antlerless deer permits around the state, they pretty much held the line on that, right? They're not really offering, especially in the north, they're not offering any more doe permits. The idea, especially up there, is to try to grow the herd. Like in my area, I'm in that 300 series. We can kill a bunch of does. We're just coming off the early antlerless deer season and the youth hunt. Those still exist in a solid number of deer permit areas around the state. It's interesting how we've got some areas where we want to kill more deer and then other areas where we're trying to grow the herd.
Yeah, like in the north there, Lindsay Chartel, the regional manager up there, just looking here, she mentioned that they reduced antlerless permits in 8 of their northeast region DPAs. There, I believe it's 10 bucks only deer permit areas up there where hunters can only take bucks and everything. And that's what's fascinating about writing this report for Minnesota. It's such a diverse landscape in this state when it comes to deer. I mean, I've hunted so many different, you know, areas of the state, from the southwest to the central to, I mean, I'm in areas of the southwest where it's nothing but farm fields as far as you can see, to central Minnesota, which is considered the best deer habitat, you may maybe outside of the southeast in the state. And then also areas of like the northwest where it's a lot of ag mixed with, you know, rivers. I hunt near the Red River system there and stuff, but you just have this vast variety of habitats in everything in Minnesota. So yeah, like I mentioned in the story, what one hunter sees this coming firearm season could and probably will be very different from what another hunter will see in a different area of the state.
One last question for you, Eric. This is a personal thing I keep bringing up. I keep maintaining that the loss to grasslands, like CRP acres, has not helped deer populations in the southern and western portion of the state. I really believe that grassland cover is more important for white-tailed deer than a lot of people understand or want to believe. You're a hardcore deer hunter. What's your quick take on that?
I believe it's just a fact. Okay. It's just straight up true. I can tell you quickly here, I used to hunt in North Dakota, in kind of north central North Dakota, where during years of the CRP boom up there, where there was just a ton of CRP on the landscape, the deer we saw hunting essentially shelter belts surrounded by CRP was through the roof. There was a ton of coyotes out there. There was a ton of deer. They coexisted. And most of that CRP in that area that I hunted, well, all of it almost essentially got taken out. Mm-hmm. And yes, it just, the deer populations plummeted. Yeah. To the point where I don't hunt there anymore because there was nothing to go back to, essentially.
Well, we did not plan this conversation, folks. That was organic. I appreciate your response. I think it's counterintuitive to a lot of people, Eric. They think deer need forests. They need trees to survive. And yet thick grassland is awesome thermal cover that whitetails thrive in.
Yeah. And I grew up in southwestern Minnesota. This is an area of the state where it's a ton of grassland. I shouldn't say a ton, but like the area of the state where you see a lot of those bigger blocks of grassland habitat that are many think of as pheasant habitat. In pheasant hunting over the years, we have kicked up some of the biggest bucks I've ever seen lying in CRP fields.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. Especially if you get that mix of grassland habitat with wetlands, you know, where you got some cattails, you got some willows, things like that. And I mentioned that in the story and talking with the regional manager down there in the Southwest, we talked about that. Just don't ignore those areas this gun season. Just because you can't hang a tree stand on some of those properties doesn't mean that there's not deer out there to be had.
Excellent advice as we wrap up. Thanks so much, Eric. This has been a fun segment. Good luck to you the rest of the archery season, and good luck to your extended family and friends during the firearms deer season, again, which kicks off on Saturday, November 9th. Have a good week ahead, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Rob. You too.
Eric Morgan. He's the web editor at Outdoor News, and he's very serious about his deer hunting. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Get ready for Minnesota's favorite winter pastime. The Hardwater Ice Fishing Expo is back at the National Sports Center in Blaine. November 16th and 17th, experience the ultimate ice fishing extravaganza. Explore the latest gear from high-tech augers to the newest in rods and reels. Meet the pros, learn tips and tricks from ice fishing legends. Don't miss out on direct deals from manufacturers and exclusive show specials. Mark your calendars for the Hardwater Ice Fishing Expo. November 16th and 17th at the National Sports Center in Blaine. Get your tickets at hardwaterexpo.com.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Cold temperatures are on the way. If you're a hunter, you want to stay out longer, no matter what the thermometer says. Arctic Shield, L&M Fleet Supply, and Outdoor News are teaming up to give away the best cold weather hunting gear in the industry. Between now and the end of October, you can win a full set of Arctic Shield Classic Elite Parka and Bibs. We'll give away two full sets per week in October. To enter, just click on the contest tab at OutdoorNews.com.
Love the great outdoors? Then you need Outdoor News in your life. Outdoor News is your go-to source for local hunting and fishing intel, conservation news, and outdoor adventure stories. Stay informed on seasons, limits, and the best spots to cast your line or set up your stand. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, Outdoor News has something for every outdoor adventurer. Subscribe today. Visit OutdoorNews.com or call 1-800-535-5191 to get started. Outdoor News, supporting the outdoor community since 1968.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off in the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2025. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights.
Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Thanks for tuning into the broadcast. If you like the chatter here, please check out our print version of Outdoor News. Give us a call at 800-535-5191 to subscribe. You can also do that at OutdoorNews.com, where you can also subscribe to our digital versions. So check all that out. I want to talk a little bit for this segment about a really cool program that I've been learning about. We've talked a lot over the years about programs like the Conservation Reserve Program, other grassland efforts to conserve the Prairie Pothole region. But there's similar programs for forestry in the upper Midwest and around the country. And we've got a great guest who's going to join us now. Her name is Brittany Vanderwall. She's a senior forestry manager for the American Forest Foundation. How you doing, Brittany? You hail from what? North Central Lower Peninsula of Michigan, it sounds like.
Hi, Rob. I'm based in Rogers City, Michigan, which is pretty small. Not everyone's heard of it, but it's a beautiful place.
Give us a 30,000-foot view of the American Forestry Foundation, and then we'll talk more about the specific program that you're involved in. What is the AFF?
Yeah, so the American Forest Foundation has been around for several decades, and our focus is currently and has always been working with private forest landowners. Your listeners might know the American Tree Farm System. It's a really popular program with forest landowners that's been around for a long time, since the 40s, and that's one of our staple programs that we offer to landowners, the big green sign, if you will. You probably see that around. So we've been working with private landowners in various capacities over the decades, and now we're all in right now on the Family Forest Carbon Program, which is our newest offering for private landowners, and we've been doing that for about 4 years now.
The Family Forest Carbon Program, the American Forest Foundation, as well as the Nature Conservancy have kind of teamed up on this. A lot of the listeners to this show are familiar with TNC. We've interviewed folks from there and talked a lot about some of their programs. But we hear a lot about carbon sequestration, and that's what this program is aiming to help bolster, right? What does that mean, carbon sequestration, for folks out there who don't understand that term?
Yeah, so trees, of course, we know they eat CO2 and they suck that out of the atmosphere, and that's how they grow. So, you know, when you modify the way trees grow by modifying traditional forestry, over time we can see a difference in their growth, and that growth is the carbon sequestration and storage, the carbon that they're pulling out of the atmosphere. So the goal here really with this program is to pay landowners to modify their traditional forestry practices a little bit, to store more of that carbon. And the reason we're looking to do that is, of course, to mitigate some of the effects of climate change and do what we can.
Climate change, global warming is all about too much carbon in the atmosphere, too much CO2. And trees love the stuff. So if you plant more, and not just trees, you know, I think there's something to be said. I talked about CRP earlier, the Conservation Reserve Program. Grasslands consume a lot of CO2 also. We'll focus on trees here right now. The idea with this Family Forest Carbon Program is to provide some financial and technical assistance to landowners out there, small landowners, really, and get them to improve their forestry practices in exchange for a contract. Is that kind of getting to the nuts and bolts here?
Yeah, that's right. So it's a 20-year contract. Landowners get an annual payment for participation, and it's based on the tree type that they have. So in the upper Midwest, we're looking for like maple-dominated hardwoods or oak-dominated hardwoods, and you only need 30 acres of forest to participate at the right stocking. And they do get technical forestry assistance. So we have a lot of different staff foresters that talk to landowners and visit them to do assessments of their land and eligibility checks. But yeah, it's free to participate. The landowner just has to go to our website and submit their land for an evaluation. They can either talk with the forester on the phone, or they can have a site visit to determine eligibility. And it's a pretty easy process from there.
Now, there's some quote-unquote forested lands out there that are actually pretty lousy in terms of quality. I'm talking about, again, a 30, 40-acre property that's full of box elders and European buckthorn. Is that a property that would be eligible, or would there need to be, you know, some forestry work that would need to go into that first before it would be eligible?
I guess the short answer is that it depends, right? So degraded forests that have issues are not necessarily fully ineligible, but those would each have to be looked at on an individual basis. And what I'd say is FFCP, the Family Forest Carbon Program, might provide a little financial assistance to deal with those problems, right? Like if there's some understory like buckthorn, different invasive species issues, you know, this financial incentive might help treat some of that.
Do you accept a lot of the contracts you get, or do you find you have to reject a lot of them because of some of the quality forest issues you just mentioned?
Yeah, so our first step, I will say, so when landowners come to the website and they submit their parcels for us to check out, we have a lot of really sophisticated geospatial data at the front end that will give us a guess as to should we proceed, you know, does the landowner have the right fit for us? And then if we get it wrong, they can contest that, you know, but our data, I will say, has gotten pretty good. So we have a pretty good initial guess. And from there, they can schedule with a forester or one of our account managers to discuss further and go from there. But as far as rejection at the back end, you know, there's a variety of different reasons why a landowner might reject. Once they get through our initial filters, we know they're eligible, like their cover type and their forest is eligible. But there's a variety of different reasons why they might determine later on that it's not a good fit, right? It's a program, you know, with a 20-year contract. And for some folks, that can be a little bit much.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. We're chatting with Brittany Vanderwall, a senior forestry manager with the American Forest Foundation. We're talking about the Family Forest Carbon Program, a fascinating program. I think it's really interesting. So the landowners signed this 20-year contract. Basically, the main thing is they can't cut down any trees during that 20 years for the most part. I'm painting with a broad brush there, but that's probably the gist of it. What kind of money can they expect from this? Can you speak to numbers a little bit, Brittany?
Yeah. So before I answer that, I will correct you on the forestry part. We do actually have a harvest allowance, and it's pretty generous for a carbon program. And we're unique in that way, in that it's more common, I would say, for a carbon sequestration program to fully limit harvesting outright and not allow for any tree cutting. But in the upper Midwest, our offering, we do allow up to 25% within the contract area can be harvested. There is some forestry allowance, and that's sort of, I guess, the keystone of our program is that it's a practice-based approach. We're not paying landowners for their carbon per se. We're paying them to change their forestry and manage a little differently. And that difference in management is really what we're quantifying. So it's pretty unique in that way. To the second part of your question, for payments, in the Midwest, it's a one-for-one. So however many eligible acres that you have multiplied by our rate. And we have two different rates. There's the standard rate and the premium rate. And the premium rate just means that it's federal money. So you get a little bit more because there's a couple of extra steps to spend. So the standard rate is $200 per acre over the 20-year contract period. So how that shakes out is $200 times your eligible acreage. Premium is 200, so 20% extra.
Okay, so that's some real cash over a 20-year contract. I think we probably got some listeners' attention with those numbers, Brittany. The program's been around for, what, about 4 years, you said. How many landowners, do you have any way to quantify that? How many landowners in the state of Minnesota or in the region have taken advantage of Family Forest Carbon Program just yet?
I can't speak to the Midwest specifically, but nationally, over the 4 years, we have about 700 landowners making up just over 100,000 acres enrolled.
Brittany, before we go, I think I've got a lot of young people out there. They're listening to you speak and maybe wondering, how do I get into the business of forestry? How do I become a senior forestry manager like Brittany Vanderwall? Any quick thoughts about the field?
Yeah, I love forestry. I did fall into it. It wasn't something I aspired to do my whole life. I sort of fell into it right when I got to college. I went to Michigan Tech University. So I'd say find a really good accredited college, accredited as in Society of American Foresters accreditation. We have a couple in Michigan, Michigan State and Michigan Tech and a few others. I can't speak to Wisconsin and Minnesota since I am a Michigander, but if you look for great forestry colleges in the upper Midwest, there are many, and you get your start there and sort of see once you get into the education what niche within the profession speaks to you.
I certainly know the University of Minnesota, University of Wisconsin have great forestry programs. I'm sure those are accredited, but that's interesting that you kind of got into it when you got to college. You weren't exactly sure what you were going to do when you got there, and you've forged a successful career. So thanks for spending some time with me explaining the Family Forest Carbon Program. The website, by the way, to learn all the details, familyforestcarbon.org. If you are a landowner out there, maybe an aspiring landowner, wondering how you can become a property owner yourself, this is a way to maybe make that happen. If you intend to buy hunting land, right, and you just want to keep it in forest anyway, it might be a way to generate some income off that property and help pay some bills. Do you have folks out there like that, Brittany, who come to you and you're like, yeah, this is my hunting property. I'd like to enroll it in this program?
Oh, absolutely. Hunters are a common entry into our program. And I will say, too, I should mention, if you are a hunter and you have a forest management plan and you're managing your property already, we can certainly take a look and there is some flexibility to work with those programs.
Excellent. Well, Brittany, it's been fun getting to know you. Thank you for all your work on a great program, doing your help to build healthier forests and combat climate change while you're at it. Again, if people want more details, familyforestcarbon.org. Brittany, thanks for chatting with me. Have a great week ahead.
Thanks. You too.
That was Brittany Vanderwall from the American Forest Foundation. Appreciate her joining us. And again, check out that website, familyforestcarbon.org. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Sick of eating tag soup? It's time to own your odds this fall with OnX Hunt, the GPS hunting app trusted by millions of hunters. Now you'll have access to nationwide public and private land ownership information, waypoints, optimal wind for each stand, tracks, and much more. All at your fingertips. Go to onxmaps.com/hunt and use code ODN20 at checkout to receive 20% off your membership. That's code ODN20.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
The North Metro Ice Show is back at Adrenaline Sports Center in Ramsey, October 26th and 27th, presented by Thorn Brothers and Ice Castle Fish Houses. Kids under 5 are free, and so is parking. One ticket covers both days. Each entry pass includes 5 free raffle tickets with $5,000 in prizes. Over 60 top ice fishing brands, plus wheeled and skid houses on display. Don't miss the first ice fishing show of the season, October 26th and 27th at Adrenaline Sports Center in Ramsey. For more information, go to northmetroiceshow.com.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to OutdoorNews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. Stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hotspots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
Get ready for Minnesota's favorite winter pastime. The Hardwater Ice Fishing Expo is back at the National Sports Center in Blaine. November 16th and 17th, experience the ultimate ice fishing extravaganza. Explore the latest gear from high-tech augers to the newest in rods and reels. Meet the pros, learn tips and tricks from ice fishing legends. Don't miss out on direct deals from manufacturers and exclusive show specials. Mark your calendars for the Hardwater Ice Fishing Expo. November 16th and 17th at the National Sports Center in Blaine. Get your tickets at hardwaterexpo.com.
This segment is brought to you by the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest. Thank you to key sponsors, Federal Premium, Cold Steel, and Wildlife Research Center. Welcome back, everybody. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerisline. Tim Lesmeister is going to help me wrap it up. Read Tim at OutdoorNews.com or in the print version. Give us a call at 800-535-5191 to subscribe. Or you can do that at OutdoorNews.com. We got digital and print versions. Makes a great holiday gift. And Tim, welcome. Good to see you. And there's quite a few little things on the agenda today. First off, I got my daughter out turkey hunting last weekend. And shame on me for not doing it sooner, huh?
I think that's fantastic. And then what's great is that she got to get out with Grandpa. And that's about the best thing that you can have happen. I mean, I love taking my grandkids hunting. And I loved my boys, too, you know, when they were coming up and you got your boys into the sport. But it's great that your daughter actually just came out of the blue and showed an interest.
Yeah. And I wrote bad dad at the top of it because it's kind of shame on me. I mean, we rant and rave about getting youth involved. And I freely admit I did not think ahead with my daughter and really anticipate that she might be interested in hunting. I've got the three boys. We did a lot of hunting and fishing with them. They still do. But my daughter was really into dance, really into ballet. She's into cross country and track. She's quite a musician. She plays piano. She plays the violin. And, you know, she likes to spend time with her girlfriends and that sort of thing. So it caught me off guard a little bit when she really, Tim, it was out of the blue. She said, "Dad, I want to take firearm safety and maybe go hunting." I was like, "Oh, okay, great. You know, fantastic." I didn't try to talk her out of it by any means, neither did my wife. I was like, "Okay, let's do it." And a couple quick points. She did the online class. She just did that herself. She's very savvy. She just figured that out. But you still have to do the field day if you're a youth. And I tell you what, getting into one of those hybrid program youth days is challenging. They fill up quickly. I contacted a couple other classes that were not hybrid and said, "Hey, do you have room for one girl?" And by the way, sort of like the DMV, how there's no DMVs in the metro, you got to go outstate, you know, to get your kid a driver's license. It's sort of like that. I find myself, you know, what's within an hour or two of the Twin Cities where my daughter can go do one of these field days, Tim? And they're all full. So if you've got a young person out there who wants to do this, it's true. It's no joke. Register for the field day early.
Yeah, that's good advice. So yeah, women are great hunters. You start them early and you're going to have somebody that puts meat on the table for you, even when you can't.
Before we got her out, of course, we wanted her to do some shooting. She shot the .22 and had some nice groups with that. And then we said, okay, let's try to pattern the shotgun with a turkey target. And I shot it first with my big 12-gauge autoloader. And I was like, man, this thing's got a pretty good kick. And I was kind of talking to my dad like, man, we got a .20, don't we, and a 16-gauge. He's like, yeah, but I don't have any turkey ammo for it. And my daughter heard that, and she was like mad. She's like, I can do it. She said, I don't need a small shotgun. She like grabbed the shotgun. She sat down and put a couple rounds through it. She's like, no problem. I'm like, okay. It's a good learning experience for me. But that said, you know, like I was talking to my dad about guys using 410s for turkeys. He's like, how are they doing that? He said, that's not powerful enough. I said, they got new turkey loads, Dad. You don't have as many pellets, but a lot of guys like taking full grown men like taking a 410 or a 20 out for turkeys because they're so darn light.
Yeah, I agree. They've got great turkey loads for those smaller caliber weapons right now. So if you're taking a young person out and you're worried about the 12-gauge, you do have options.
Tim, moving on, there was an item in Mixed Bag about cold water that caught your attention. It was from the Minnesota DNR. It's one of those boilerplate releases we get from the agency every year. It didn't necessarily jump out at me, but I think it is a good reminder. There is going to be cold water here eventually.
I have good experience with this because, you know, I've always been one of those Boy Scouts that really want to make sure I'm safe when I'm on the water. And I hated wearing those life jackets. They're bulky. When you try to bring your gun up. So you feel compelled not to wear it when you're in one of these small boats. Every year we read about these duck hunters, these waterfowl hunters that end up in the water and their waders fill up and they don't make it out. But here's the thing. Right now you have better options. You've got these self-inflating life jackets, these PFDs that you just literally pull the cord. I've had to use one twice, and they work really, really well. Drop the bucks that you need to get into these. When you're going out on the water, you'll be much safer wearing them. Do not buy the auto-inflate, because if it's raining out, that auto-inflate is going to blow up. it's going to expand on you. I've had that happen. And what I've also had happen is that, you know, you'll have a couple guys in the boat. You'll hand somebody you've never hunted with before one of these auto inflators, and you know, you get some stuff on it from being in the cattails or whatever. And they get back and they want to clean it off, so the first thing they do is dunk it in the water.
Boom, huh?
Yeah, boom, and it scares them. Get the manual inflators, and they're very comfortable, and you can shoulder your gun and shoot, and not even know that you're wearing one. You just have to have that to be safe this year.
Yeah, good advice. It can happen to anyone. We had a CO die a few years ago, I think on a call, but fell into the lake or river and die in a cold water situation. So it can happen to anybody. Be careful. Wear a life jacket of some sort. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister are bringing it home. Some stories from other states that perhaps we should discuss a little bit. One is this raccoon thing. This was everywhere, but we got it in Beyond Minnesota here this week. A woman feeding raccoons somehow shocked when she's suddenly overwhelmed with like over 100 raccoons, right?
She had to flee her home. She dialed 911 and said, "Send somebody out here to help me. I'm being attacked." I mean, they're it's like a zombie infiltration. There were hundreds, literally hundreds of coons, raccoons that were being fed, of course. She started feeding a few and then a few more. And pretty soon she would drive up to her house in her car and they would come out to greet her. She couldn't get out of her car. They'd follow her up to her house, scratch on the door, look in the windows. That had to be like an Alfred Hitchcock movie. She freaked out. She said they were getting very aggressive.
Yeah, go figure. Yeah.
When she wouldn't feed them.
I've had a lot of thoughts about this. Raccoons, an interesting animal, a native species to North America, one that probably didn't exist in big numbers when more of the continent was forested, right? They're kind of a creature of the edge. They've adapted very well to people. They like garbage. They like the waste that humans leave behind. I suspect there's many, many more raccoons in North America than there were pre-settlement. And you can't hold that against an animal, right, for adapting to the environment, for being adaptable. But I also firmly believe there are too many raccoons. It's too bad. There's really very little market, I guess, for raccoon fur. I was talking to one of the trapping biologists about this recently. I wish there was more of a market for people to trap raccoons and kill more of them. I guess the bottom line with this specific case is don't feed wildlife like this, especially raccoons. Don't do that. Otherwise, this is what's going to happen.
Well, you still could get a couple dollars for a hide, so that's the remedy. This woman should have bought a fur bear tag. She could have ended up with, 120 raccoon hides, couple bucks a piece, $250. You can buy, a nice little .22 rifle for that.
I don't know what the season is specifically there. And this kind of brings up another point. We used to have a year-round season on raccoons. You could kill raccoons whenever, like we do with coyotes now, which you could argue if we don't allow a continuous season on raccoons, why are we allowing continuous on coyotes? When I believe it was the Trappers Association advocated for a season on raccoons, not continuous. This is probably 15 plus years ago, maybe 20 years ago. I was one of the few outdoor raiders to kind of raise my hand and say, why are we doing this? We've got a ton of raccoons. These things are murder on duck nests, on pheasant nests, on all of our songbirds, upland game. Well, why would we take pressure off raccoons? And I talked to a couple fur bear biologists who said it really won't make any difference in terms of the number of dead raccoons out there, and the pelts are more valuable when you've got a season, and you're only harvesting the animals during that specific season. I don't know. My gut still says we should be shooting these things at will, whenever they're causing a problem. And you can, right? If an animal's causing a problem, you can still take it out. But I wish we had a continuous season on raccoons, Tim.
Well, I used to keep a live trap out at my house in Minnetonka, and there were times when I would get a raccoon every night.
I believe it. Yeah.
Like 3 weeks straight. There are just a lot of raccoons. They would turn on my motion lights on the side of my house, and there'd be three or four raccoons all just milling around something that, obviously died and that they were eating or whatever. And so, yeah, raccoons are very plentiful. And this woman found out the hard way by starting to feed them and realized that they communicate with each other. They were telling their buddies, come on, we got free meals. Let's go.
Tim, out of time. Safe travels to you. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for joining me, bud.
Yeah, next week we'll be talking from Lake of the Ozarks down in Missouri.
Awesome. Looking forward to getting some fishing reports down there.
Sounds good.
Yep, that was Tim Lesmeister. We are out of time. Everybody have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Dreesline signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story and the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.